Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Society Talks. I'm Joe Lorenzo. I am here with Jason Collette. Hi, Jason. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing well, Joe.
Good. So the first things first, everybody should know we're doing this remotely. I usually do it in a studio in Hollywood, and Jason's in Atlanta. I'm in New Jersey. We're doing our safer at home thing. So, and how are you doing through all of this?
I'm doing pretty well, actually. My daily routine hasn't changed all that much.
That's good. So let's start at the beginning. Where'd you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Florida, Pompano Beach. Well, that's where I was born. But at an early age, I moved to Atlanta, lived in the suburbs of Atlanta for most of my childhood. I had one of those childhoods that you see in like 80s movies where it's basically just a group of kids wandering around the neighborhood, getting into trouble, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't find any dead bodies, though, or, you know, battle any evil clowns in the sewer. But we did check.
Yeah.
I lived in the suburbs pretty much all my life up until kind of around high school, college. That's when I moved out to the country. Douglasville, to be exact, if you're not familiar with where, you know, the countrysides of Atlanta. Lived out there, went to college out in University of West Georgia, number one party school in the Southeast.
Is it really?
And it was at the time. It's actually changed a lot in the last couple of years. But when I went there, that was kind of like what it was known for. I mean, it was my number one choice, my one and only choice. And I loved it. I had such a blast there, and I wasn't really even into the party scene.
Why was it your one and only choice?
I don't know. There's something about it. I love the campus. I went there and checked it out, and I was like, yep, this is where I'm going to be.
Okay.
And that was kind of it for me.
And not too far from your parents or your home?
Oh, no. Yeah. That's another thing, too. It was fairly close, maybe 45 minutes.
Okay.
So I could actually still live at home while going to the college.
And that's amazing.
Yeah.
Saves a lot of money. Have you lived in Los Angeles or New York or any of the major markets? Now, I mean, look, Atlanta's a major market, but have you gone to any of those major markets like after college?
Oh, yeah. So in college, I couldn't really pinpoint exactly what I wanted to do. It was tough for me because, you know, wanting to be an actor, there's not a whole lot going on in Atlanta in 2007, I think this was around. So it was either you had to be in New York or LA. So in college, I was finishing up all my core classes, doing some community theater. I was head of the dinner theater program at West Georgia, which I helped kind of like jumpstart. But I still wasn't feeling like I was satiated. You know, I wanted more.
Yeah.
So when I was sitting down with the counselor, they were telling me, okay, well, you got to figure out what you want to major in. And, you know, I didn't want to go for theater because my mindset was on film and TV. So, you know, I kind of dabbled in a lot of different majors, business, philosophy, psychology. Psychology might have been my favorite to study because I love the study of people and things like that. But really, ultimately, I wanted to be an actor. And the counselor was the one that sat me down. She was like, well, if you want to be an actor, you got to go to either LA or New York. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to go to LA. And 2 weeks later, I pulled out of the house that I was renting and I took off to the West Coast. And that was 2007. I lived in LA for about 10 years before coming back to Atlanta.
And did that sort of blindly, or did you have an agent? Did you know people out there, or was it just like?
Oh, no, I didn't know anybody. I was completely in the blind. Yeah, I just packed up my car and drove. And I was like, you know what? I'll figure it out when I get there. All I knew was that I needed to get out of Atlanta at the time. It's only ironic that I showed up, you know, 10 years later.
Well, and it's grown so much. So who would have known,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
10 years ago, 13 years ago or whatever.
I don't think anybody could have predicted.
Yeah. And I honestly think sometimes not having a safety net going out somewhere and having I don't know about fear, but not having the safety net and just it's sort of sink or swim, you know?
Yeah. There's something exciting about it too. Like going into the unknown, just taking your chances out there, not knowing anybody, just kind of winging it.
Yeah.
So there was some excitement to it too. Not just nervousness.
And what was your first big thing that out there? Was it a commercial? Was it TV, film? What was it?
The first big thing out there, it took me a couple of years to kind of get situated out there in Los Angeles, kind of find my bearings, figure out like, okay, where do I need to go? How do I get the experience? How do I get the training? So I started out pretty much doing what most every actor does when they get to LA and you jump into the background scene, just because I needed to get that experience on sets. I did background for like 2 years and it drove me crazy because, you know, being an actor, wanting to be in front of the camera in the foreground is just torture when you're limited to only a blurred background. So, but doing background gave me tons of experience, tons of kind of like on set practical training. And it helped prepare me for when I did get those big jobs. And it also gave me tons of fun celebrity stories too. Like I could go on and on about fun little things that happened to me on sets. But
I want to come back to that, but what do you mean by the training as far as like the hours and the dedication or?
Well, yeah, definitely that. It definitely helps prepare you for what an average day on set is, but more so like I didn't know what a mark was. I didn't know what first teams were. I didn't know what stand-ins did. Like, not every background actor likes to do this, but for me, it was all about like taking in as much as I could about how a set is run and what each person's position and how it's, you know, how it lends itself to the overall filmmaking process. It was the whole thing was just teaching, a learning experience for me.
Yeah, it's great. So. I know you have, and I think you have a stunt background. Is that true?
Yeah, I have a little bit of a stunt background. So when I first got to LA, I needed a job. And before I got into the background scene, I had some experience working in theme parks as a costumed character.
No, which one?
I was Robin in the Justice League. When Warner Brothers and DC had their partnership with Six Flags and they were doing, you know, those costumed characters that would like do meet and greets and parades and, you know, the shows and stuff like that. And I was one of the first actors ever hired to do that. I actually got hired out of Atlanta. So it seemed like an easy transition to like get when I got to LA. I was like, you know, they have a park out there. Might as well jump into that scene. And I stayed there for a couple of years as I was doing background and getting my training and experience and kind of figuring out the lay of the land. But during that time, I got heavily involved with like some of the actors who worked in the stunt shows. And through them, they trained me how to do the stunts in the stunt show. And, you know, everything from fight choreography to weapon handling, pole climbing, bungee cords and stuff like that. Even a little bit of ATV training as well. So, and that kind of translated into film and TV a little bit.
Yeah. Can you still do all of that? Like if you on a set, you could do your own stunts?
Oh yeah. I definitely could. I don't really like to, you know, to like market myself too much as a stuntman per se, just because, you know, it was something that I was never really focused in. So there's much more better stuntmen out there who could do those stunts than I could. But it was always fun to book a role where, you know, it's a very emotional role, but at the same time I'm getting tackled and kicked and punched and all kinds of other stuff. So yeah, that was always fun. I do enjoy doing stunts. Anytime I can do my own stunts, I'm all for it.
That's awesome.
But as you get on some of the bigger like sets and stuff like that, they don't like you doing your own stunts. They always want like a stunt for insurance purposes.
They have to protect their investment too, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
You as the actor. Mm-hmm. So I want to get to you have an amazing, amazing project coming out on Netflix later this year called The Devil All the Time, correct?
I do. Devil All the Time.
Yeah. But first I wanted to chat with you because I know that somebody sent over that you did a documentary called Bullied, a student, a school, and a case that made history.
Yes, that actually comes back to the question you asked that I never got around to, is the very first big project, and it was Bullied.
Okay.
Yeah. That was 2010.
In a documentary, what does it mean that you played a role? Was it flashbacks, or what was happening?
So the documentary, that documentary was based on the life of a man named Jamie Nabosny, who he was known for being one of the very first cases of a student suing a school board for not protecting his rights as an individual. Jamie is a homosexual, and he was bullied throughout all his high school, middle school days, and bullied to the point to where people would verbally abuse him, but also physically beat him, and in some cases even torture him, to the point to where he almost committed suicide multiple times, ran away from home. And it was his story is so unremarkable that they decided to make a movie about it, just because of how the great thing that came out of it is he ended up suing the school board and winning. It was the very first court case of its kind. And Jamie was awarded, tons of news coverage across the country. And it really brought everything that was happening behind the scenes in these school systems to light. So it was a very good project. I'm extremely proud to be able to play Jamie in the documentary. But yes, it was. So the way that it was kind of formatted was you'd have Jamie's story kind of plays out chronologically. But it's also interlaced with interviews from the real life people involved in the story. But I'm portraying Jamie throughout the I guess they would be flashbacks, but
where can people see that?
So you can actually get that online. It was, I believe it's on the Southern Poverty Law's teaching website. Because that was the reason it was made. It was distributed to schools across the country to help bring awareness in schools for kids.
Got it.
It's funny. I've actually been recognized on the street by people and students and teachers who are like, "I've seen you in my class." That's funny.
Yeah. So that's good. I mean, you can Google. So I would just suggest everybody Google, because that sounds like really important. Something really, really important.
It's fantastic. I think you could also rent it or stream it on maybe Amazon or even
maybe
YouTube.
iTunes or something.
Yeah, maybe iTunes.
Google bullied a student, a school, and a case that made history. I'm going to do it after this. Sounds important. I don't even know how I missed that.
Yeah, for some reason the documentary we had such huge hopes high hopes for it, and it definitely. We definitely accomplished a lot with it. At one point, it was even under Oscar consideration for best documentary feature. We actually had Jane Lynch do the narration for it, so it definitely had some big names backing it. It just ended up not going anywhere ultimately, in the Oscar consideration.
You can find it out there, and I'm going to Google it after this. It sounds like an amazing project. It reminds me of it. What they just recently did based on that book Wonder, and they made, I don't know if it was a nationwide thing, but I know a lot of schools implemented that book because you know what I'm talking about. Julia Roberts made the movie as the mom, the boy that I don't know what it's called that he had, but his facial disfiguration and all that. But they put it sort of as a curriculum in school, like what you're saying about this bullied story. I think it's so important because I think they don't, it's so much, only so much a teacher can do. It's sort of, I don't want to say a rite of passage, but it's something that happens and it sucks and it shouldn't. And it, and especially in the gay community, I am gay and I sit on the board LA LGBT Center and we see it all the time. So that's a really important piece that you're a part of. So I like that.
Yeah, it's great that they're able to put these kind of lessons and bring awareness to these subjects in the form of that kind of medium to be able to keep the kids' attention and stuff like that, as opposed to just, preaching it to them.
Yeah,
kids can actually sit down, they can watch it, they can follow a character, they can see their struggle through the narrative and stuff like that. It's very powerful stuff.
Yeah. Well, you have an amazing project coming out. It's coming out later this year. It's called The Devil All the Time.
Devil All the Time.
It's based on a novel, and it's coming out on Netflix, correct?
Yes, it'll be streaming on Netflix. Netflix has not released an official date yet.
Okay.
So I've been hearing rumors through the grapevine, but so far nothing has really panned out. I've heard as early as May, but I don't see that happening. I think that was probably before you know, the public health crisis happened, and who knows, everything's getting pushed back and delayed, and it's kind of like uncertain right now when things are going to come out. But
yeah. Well, it's either they're either being pushed back or they're being pushed up. That yeah. Netflix wants to push stuff out because obviously everybody's staying at home. So
yeah,
and it's executive produced by Jake Gyllenhaal. Is he in it?
Jake Gyllenhaal is not in it. He's producing it alongside his producing partner Reva Marker with Nine Story Productions, and he's not in it. But it does feature an incredible cast of other actors.
Tom Holland, right?
Oh yeah, Tom Holland, Sebastian Stan, Robert Pattinson, Bill Skarsgård, Jason Clarke, Riley Keough. I mean, like. The cast list is incredibly stacked. At one point, we had Chris Evans attached to it. He dropped out, and then that's when Sebastian came in and kind of took his place.
And so what can you tell us about it? I mean, it's hard to do these things because you can only give away so much. But I think it's based on a book, so I mean, I feel like you can at least give that, you know?
Yeah, it's based on a book by Donald Ray Pollock called, you know, the same name, Devil All the Time. Phenomenal book, but the book itself is just, it's crazy. It's so kind of like dark and twisted. It's very bizarre, but the book follows an ensemble cast of characters. Takes place in 1960s, you know, Ohio. And it follows characters ranging from like a spider handling preacher to a pair of, you know, road traveling serial killers, you know? So it's crazy.
Okay. You read the book before you started the movie, or was it something where you got, maybe got the audition or you got the offer to do the movie and then said, all right, let me read this book?
Yeah, when I got the audition, I wasn't familiar with the material at all, but I sat down and I read, you know, the script that was provided to me, and I was blown away. Like, I read it and I immediately called my agent back and I was like, I have to do this. So I immediately, before I even did the audition, I went and I read the whole book from front to back, just because I wanted to know as much about this world that, you know, that's been created and that these characters live in, and I loved it. I mean, and I actually went on to read Pollock's next book, Heavenly Table, which I hope that they make a movie of that too. That's crazy.
And how much of the book? Ultimately, because, you know, I mean, sometimes they have to cut it for time or whatever, but how much of the book ultimately makes it onto the screen?
I'd say a pretty decent amount. Antonio and Paulo Campos, they're the ones that adapted the screenplay for the novel. And Antonio pretty much plays it pretty much almost like exactly how it happens in the book. There are certain things that have to be cut, you know, just for time and things like that. But thankfully, my character actually got... developed more so than he was in the book, so thankful for that.
Okay. What was the where'd you shoot that?
We shot that in Alabama.
Okay.
Alabama has some really interesting kind of rural areas that have so much character to it. I you know, I grew up in the country, so I love everything about the Southeast, and Alabama just has some really interesting locations that perfect for shooting a movie that's like kind of dark and gritty and raw. So we shot that kind of a couple different places out in Alabama, but most of my stuff took place in like the woods too. So,
ooh, what time of year? Was it cold or was it?
This was around. This was actually about March or April of last year is when we filmed that.
Oh, that's not bad in Alabama. No, you can either be really hot out there or you can be really cold.
Yeah, luckily it was like that perfect time of the year where it's like a comfortable 70, 75 degrees.
Yeah. And who, a lot of your scenes are with everybody, or, cause you say it's sort of a ensemble. Are they you guys all together, or who do you have most of your scenes with?
Most of my scenes take place with kind of like a Jason Clarke, Riley Keough. Mm-hmm. Those are the majority of my scenes. Okay. I didn't get to interact with much of the main cast. Tom was there on my last day of filming. And he kind of, you know, just gave me a congratulations as I was going out and he was coming in. So unfortunately, I didn't get to work with any of them, but I would have loved to.
Yeah. It happened so much, though. I think I remember watching an interview of, it was like Meryl Streep and Nicole Kidman, and they were on the interview together. And they said, you know, you work together, but did you even meet? And they said, no, we never even met on the movie. Because they shot their, you know, there are two different storylines in that movie, but they shot them different, you know, at different times or whatever. So you can be in a movie with whomever, all of these great people, and almost never even meet them.
Yeah. And especially a movie like this, you've got such a huge cast with so many different storylines happening. It's, you know, not, there's a few times during the narrative when storylines intersect and they cross over. But unfortunately, that doesn't happen with many of my scenes.
Yeah. How long did it take to film?
I was only out in Alabama for like a week. Like, this set was so efficient. We were shooting really quick. Antonio has such an eye for what he wants.
Well, he came from TV, you said, right? The Sinner or something?
Yeah. Well, he's done TV, but most of his like projects starting out, he did a lot of like full-length features. If you've ever seen After School with Ezra Miller, if you haven't, it's really interesting. Antonio takes so much like creative liberty, and he does things that are just like you wouldn't even imagine most filmmakers would do in a scene. Like, there's scenes in that movie where Ezra is not even in the scene. They don't even have any actors in the scene, but there's dialogue happening and it's just an empty room. But yet the way that it's shot, you're just so like, you're so engulfed into what's happening. It's like, it's so interesting how he does it, how he pulls it off. He actually does the same thing with Devil All the Time too. Not that exact same thing, but he's always pushing the limits on like not shooting a movie how a traditional film would be shot, you know?
Yeah. Well, because a lot of people don't realize that they're shot out of sequence. They're, you know, I mean, you could be doing the end of the movie at the beginning of the shoot. And I mentioned the TV thing because a lot of times you're saying it was so efficient because television has such a quick turnaround. You know, I mean, you shoot an episode and then within a few weeks, it's got to either be premiere. Not on Netflix, I guess, because they premiere them all at once, but. So that's why I asked, because I know a lot of TV directors and they're very efficient because they have deadlines, you know, film, it's a little bit more lax. So
that's very true. With the episodics and like, you know, network TV, everything has to move fast because they have deadlines. You could have the casting process, especially could be like a 2-day turnaround. Like, you audition and then you're on set, you know, by the end of the week.
Yeah. And a film could be weeks. You're like 10 weeks later, they call you. Hey, remember that project you booked? Are you auditioned for? You booked it. Yeah.
That's actually what happened with Devil is I auditioned for that back in December. But I don't think I met with Antonio for a second audition until I think it was around February. Yeah.
Okay.
So like two months went by and I was like, you know, you forget it. You put it out of your mind. You move on to the next project. And it's always nice when you get that phone call.
That's the way you have to do it too. I do seminars all over the world. And I always say, like, you go into the audition, do the audition and then shake it off. You know, when you get the call, it's a nice surprise, but don't obsess about it.
Yeah. It's best to just put it out of your mind. Bryan Cranston talks about that in his autobiography, A Life in Parts, where he talks about the audition process and he's just like, just forget it. Just let it go.
Yeah.
I think he talks about how he would keep a trash can. So at the door of his apartment. So as soon as he walks into his apartment, he takes that script and he just throws it away. And like, that's his way of releasing it and moving on.
It's so smart. Cause you really can, you do your work and then it's sort of up to the gods. It's up to the, you know, it's up to the people in the room and you just don't, you know, so it's the smartest way to do it because it's otherwise you can just drive yourself crazy. And you can drive your representatives crazy. Did I get it? You know?
Yeah. And I've done that before too. It's always hard to like resist the temptation to be like, hey, have you heard anything back yet? Just in case. And they're like, no, Jason, we'll let you know. Trust me.
Yeah. I was a manager for 17 years before I stopped. And my line would always be when my actors, hey, did I get it? Or whatever. And I said, yes, you got it. They're going to pay you $1 million. And I just decided not to tell you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the sarcasm of it is, it's true though. Like, why, you know, we will tell you any information that we have. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are you doing out there? So did you come right after this? Did you go back to Atlanta or did you go back to LA?
After the movie?
Yeah.
No, I'm actually living in Atlanta full time at the moment. I moved back in 2016 and because, you know, the industry in Atlanta is booming over the last couple of years. So I wanted to kind of take advantage of any opportunities that might have been available to me, you know, with some of these like day player and co-star roles and things like that, that are only cast locally in Atlanta.
Yeah. So you have a local local rep and a rep in LA?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm rep by a People Store out in the Southeast.
That's a good one in the Southeast, yeah.
Oh, they're phenomenal.
Yeah. Them and Joy Purvis, I know. And then there's another one. Yeah, they're good down there.
Yeah. And then the last couple of years, more and more agencies have popped up and they're, you know, they've become, you know, a fully functional, you know, hub for the Southeast talent. It's crazy.
Yeah. And there's more than just everybody, you know, because always everybody thinks of Atlanta, they think of Tyler Perry. But there's more than just that. And there's so many productions that go down there.
Oh, yeah. I think last I heard there was like over 350 productions in various stages of development happening in Atlanta. Of course, this was before the coronavirus, you know, kind of happened and everyone started social distancing. But
yeah. Have you seen Tyler Perry's new studio? Because he just built like a huge state-of-the-art studio down there, didn't he?
Oh, it's massive. I have been there. I've been there for a couple times for in-person auditions with Raven Drummer, who's one of the casting directors.
Yep.
And you walk in and it's like this massive welcome lobby and you're just immediately blown away. And that's only like a portion of it.
Wow. So what do you feel is like when we come back, which I'm hearing rumblings now at mid-June and initially it was September and now we're hearing mid-June, July. There, you know, people are meeting. I cast and I've met with other casting directors and unions and things. And we're all trying to figure it out because we don't know. Well, when this comes back, what do you think? I read an article that there's this show in Australia that just came back and they're implementing all these things like social distancing, which is odd for like intimacy scenes and things like that. What do you, have you thought about or what do you think it's going to look like when we do come back?
You know, so much is up in the air that it's kind of hard to envision what a, even with some of those precautions that people are kind of already mumbling about, it's so hard to imagine how a production can kind of like proceed under that, those guidelines. Last week I was under consideration for a project that's kind of trying to start things back up out here. And they were kind of talking to us about some of the precautions that they're taking, how they're having a nurse on set to take temperatures. They're saying that people, you know, the crews are now, they can't be more than 10 people at a time on a set. Yep. Actors have to stay 6 feet away, things like that. You can't have any intimate scenes together. And then I've even heard some people say that productions are going to start going as far as like quarantining crews together for the duration of the project so that they only interact with each other for like however many months that they're working.
I heard that too. And then making them, I also read in that part, having the crew act as background if they need to.
Oh yeah, I've read that too. That'll be interesting. I've actually worked on a lot of, because you know, doing short independent films, you know, throughout my time in LA, that's actually something I'm very familiar with. Is seeing PAs and various crew members pop in to be an extra body. So
yeah,
that's actually kind of normal.
I've produced independent film. I've cast it. And it's when you're doing an independent film, it's the crew and the cast and if you have a good one, they step in where they need to. They do more than what they're hired to do. So and I think that's what's going to start happening because like you said, if they're quarantining, let's say it's a, I don't know how you're going to have go from crews of hundreds or 100 at least to a crew of 10 guys or girls.
Yeah.
You know? I don't understand that. I mean, can you even wrap your head around that?
Well, even if they do, or if they're able to pull it off, and if they're able to pull it off efficiently, what is it going to look like once all this is done and we can go back to how things were? Now that they're able to run a film off of a crew of 10, you know, why go back to a crew of 50 or whatnot? You know, so I feel a lot of people are going to be out of work.
Well, that's the thing is that the studios and the networks and everybody are like, well, we made it happen with our skeleton crew and we can save money. And that's, I thought about that too. And that's a shame.
It really is.
Yeah. Do you feel out there? Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I've heard that during this time to kind of like facilitate that those smaller crews, they're going to start focusing on projects that take place in single locations to kind of help minimize risk. Way of
shooting as well. You know, if you don't have a lot of money, you're like, well, let's just put it all in a house.
Exactly. Just one room. One.
Yep. Yeah. I can't imagine, like, remember that movie Room with Brie Larson? She won the Oscar.
Oh yeah.
And I have to look it up. I wonder what the budget was like for that, because it's literally, well,
it's like three locations.
What?
It's like three locations, that whole movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
And not very many actors. It's the two of them most of the time. And then, you know, and then it's like she gets out in the mom and all that, but, or in the guy that has her down there. But that's a whole independent way of thinking as well. Mm-hmm. And that could be the way that they go, but I don't know. I just feel like these big blockbuster things, like how, you know, what we started talking about, you know, even in the stunt world and all that kind of stuff, there's just so many moving parts that are needed. And so I just don't know. I can't foresee it. I can see it happening for a little while, like you said, and then maybe going back, but how do they go back? And if they don't need all that crew, I have no idea. And it's, I know Tyler, because I've had clients work on his stuff. He keeps a pretty large crew.
Oh yeah. Well, he also, he has a large crew, and everybody's job is so essential. And if you've ever seen them work on a set, it's like a well-oiled machine. They're just like, they're pumping out stuff. They've got like three different crews working on the lot, filming an episode all at the same time. Like, he'll get through, you know, 20 pages of dialogue in one day.
Yeah. Do you feel like out there in Atlanta that it's more of like the big fish in a small pond kind of thing? Or is it, because it's growing, do you feel like it's becoming the LA of the South, Southeast?
I don't know. That's something that I've been thinking about the last couple of years. And obviously that's why I came out here, is because I saw their potential. But in the last couple of years, I haven't exactly seen like the huge boom. Like everyone was saying, like, oh, it's going to be like, it's going to be on par with LA or New York. And it's not to say that it definitely hasn't grown since then, but I still haven't seen it actually have that huge boom like everyone was talking about. Like, I feel like most of the roles are still being cast in LA or New York, and only the smaller local hire roles are cast in Atlanta.
Yeah. The large ones. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Devil All the Time was local hire. So there are exceptions to that, but I feel like those roles are kind of few and far in between.
Yeah. Explain to everybody what that means. I mean, I know what local hire means. Explain to everybody what that means.
Oh, local hire just means that you're based locally where the production is kind of is filming. So if, for example, if they're filming in the Southeast, they want to hire actors who are within driving distance to, you know, the sets and the production studios, as opposed to flying people out from New York, LA, Toronto, or anywhere else in the country. It's just a way for them to save money, but they expect you to be local hire because there's also so many things that could happen during travel that if for any reason your plane gets canceled or something like that, all of a sudden production has to shut down because you're not able to be on set. So for some of the smaller roles that doesn't necessitate, you know, an actor coming out of LA, they try to cast those roles just in Atlanta or wherever.
So now let's go back to the Devil All the Time. When Netflix does tell you that it's going to come out, what will that rollout look like? Because a lot of times, guys, it's like, you know, you premiere and then press junket and then running around doing everything that you can. And what do you think? I mean, I'm sure you can't say for sure, but what do you even think that might look like nowadays?
I have no idea. It's we're in uncharted territory. I was looking forward to some sort of premiere where we could all get together with the cast and we could watch it together, but clearly that can't happen under, you know, these current circumstances. So, you know,
even the red carpet they're packed on those red carpets. I was thinking the other day, I was taking a walk and I was like, you know, award season comes up in the fall, and I'm like, how are they going to do the Oscars? Like, are they going to?
Are they going to do a Zoom Oscars? That'd be
seriously. Oh my gosh! I mean, see, I would tune in
for that. Actually, I would.
I think. I mean, everybody would, because I think everybody's going to do that, especially Because I just read that it's four phases, especially for California, that they, you know, non-essential businesses like retail and things like that will come back. And then the last phase is concerts with live audiences. And they're thinking that's not going to happen until 2021 summer. Yeah. So, I mean, that's just such a hindrance on the way that people do things. But I don't know. They'll wrap their heads around it somehow.
Yeah, who knows? We're all just along for the ride at this point. I don't think anybody really knows what's happening.
Yeah, I definitely don't.
like, who's in control here? I don't think anyone's got a firm grasp on the wheel. We're all just wigging it.
Yeah. Well, I definitely appreciate you coming on, talking with me, Jason. And though I just want to mention again, Bullied, a student of school in a case that made history. Yeah. Guys, Google it. You can look. I'm sure you can get it on iTunes or any. I mean, there's so many services, Google Play or something. Figure it out. I'm going to Google it after this. And then The Devil All the Time, based on the novel, we're hoping, comes out later this year on Netflix, correct? Yep.
That's right. Hopefully sometime maybe this summer. Who knows? I didn't even get a chance to mention my character. I play Gary Matthew Bryson. So
okay. And what's he about?
Oh, Gary is he's an interesting guy. I can't give away too much because it'll be spoilers. But okay. He's a young man that's being enlisted to go to Vietnam, and he's got a very optimistic view on the world. He's, you know, just trying to find his place in the world and figure things out.
Fun to play?
Extremely fun to play. Also, incredibly uncomfortable to play at times. Like I said, this is it's a very dark, kind of gritty, raw, violent film. So my character definitely deals with a little bit of that in the film.
How much of that do you keep with you when you go home at night, and how much of it do you shake off?
It was tough. I tried to do, you know, just like Bryan Cranston. It's like when you walk off a set, leave it all behind, you know. For parts of this film, it was very difficult to do that. Like there was a very much a residual kind of like feeling in your body after you've been on set for 12 hours and you're doing and participating in things that are just like that you wouldn't normally do. So it was a little, I didn't sleep that night when I got off set, but
the very first time.
Yeah. The very first day on set was actually probably my most intense day. So I didn't sleep that day. And then it was all
that
pretty much
a lot.
It was
Why do
downhill.
They put that all up front sometimes, you know, on a film? That happens a lot. You hear that all the time. Like the major stuff was at the beginning of the shoot, or the major stuff that I had to do, I did. And the rest of the shoot was sort of a cakewalk. Why do you think that is?
I wonder if it's because of the technical aspect of it. You know, usually those really emotional, dramatic scenes, they require a little bit more prep, or maybe a little bit more, I don't know. Well, we had to rehearse. We actually met a couple of days before we did that scene on set. Just me, Jason, Riley, and Antonio, just the four of us. Mm. And we rehearsed the scene for hours and hours. And that was also when we had a chance to kind of play around. Like that was when we were giving ideas and collaborating and figuring out how we wanted it to play out. We created is actually very different than what was written in the script. So, you know, I was saying earlier, Antonio likes to come in and he knows what he wants. But one of the best things about working with Antonio is that he's also willing to let the actors kind of like move the scene in a direction that maybe he didn't originally envision it. You know,
that's great. That's collaborative. That's the way that it should be.
Yeah. And as soon as Jason Clark comes on set, I'm sorry.
I said, and you don't often get a lot of rehearsal too, so that's a blessing too.
Oh yeah, no, I was grateful when they called me up and they were like, "Oh, Antonio wants to meet with you. He wants to go over the scene." I was like, "Yes," because this is a big scene. So yeah, it was great to kind of like work through that with the cast.
And so you were able to shake it off when you got home, like you said.
I was a little bit. Okay. It did stick with me for, you know, that night. But, you know, you wake up the next morning, you go to set, and you're doing something different. So you kind of like able to kind of transition out of it into something new.
Yeah. This is dark and gritty and The Devil All the Time later this year on Netflix, which is awesome. Oh, yeah.
It's going to be
a
fantastic.
Comedy next, Jason? I don't know. What?
Yeah, I love comedy. I would love to do a comedy. I actually, you know, I do sketch comedy out here in Atlanta. And comedy is like one of my favorite things to do, but for some reason I never get booked on anything comedic. It's always like, you know, crying on camera or getting beat up and, you know, bullied and kicked around or doing stunts like on Watchmen where I'm getting mugged in an alleyway. And
yeah,
seems to be my niche.
An intense soul.
What's that?
I said, they see you as an intense soul.
Yeah. I like to joke around and say that apparently casting just sees me as somebody with a face that needs to be punched.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, I guess that's my look.
I don't know that's how your mama would describe you. Hopefully not.
Yeah, hopefully not.
Well. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you getting on and talking with me, Jason. Jason Collette, later, he's going to be in The Devil All the Time later this year on Netflix. I want to wish you stay healthy, stay safe. And Atlanta down there, Georgia, are they planning on opening soon, right?
Yeah, they're, well, the governor is saying that he wants to reopen things this week, I believe. So yeah, we're slowly but surely, they're kind of starting to trickle in, you know, businesses coming back to work. A lot of people though are just saying like, you know, they're still not comfortable. Restaurants, businesses, things like that. Even some production companies, they're just like, you know what, we're going to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah. And that's their right. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate it. Stay safe, stay healthy, Jason. We'll look for The Devil All the Time later this year on Netflix. And again, Bullied, try to look for it, Google it, a student, a school, and a case that made history. Yeah. Thank you again, Jason Collette.
Yeah, thank you. No, this was a lot of fun, Joe.
Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. And you can follow me at Joe_Lorenzo on Twitter and Instagram.